I try to be professional and I try not to do any drama. And if you do say you're going to do something, you do it and you deliver, period.
Hi, I'm Bob Acton, and I'm pleased to share my conversation with potter Nick Bernard. As Nick says, form is everything. He essentially stretches clay to make canvases for decoration. Texture, pattern, and color are successful additions when the shapes are impeccable and meet his standard. His inspiration comes from the classic forms of antiquity to the simple, graceful pots made by indigenous peoples and the work of modern studio potters. He uses dramatic color, graphic pattern, and subtle texture to accentuate what he hopes is a mastery of the traditional vessel form, regardless of the clays and firing, and he uses a couple. We also talk about making beautiful shapes, how he balances texture, form, and color, but also Nick gave us some great business advice. I hope you enjoy this episode with Nick, and I'll see you on the other side.
Welcome to Color and Ceramics, the podcast for ceramic artists who want valuable ideas about using color from leading artists and world-class experts. Here's your host, Bob Acton, a sculptor and ceramic artist who's fascinated with color and how potters, sculptors, and artists use color in their work. Tune in as he talks with his guests about color, techniques, and the impact of color on people and art itself.
Nick, welcome to the Color and Ceramics podcast. I'm really excited about you being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I've loved your work for years, your beautiful forms and the brilliant colors that you use. And I really like to see a lot of the surface texture that you're moving onto the clay. And of course, I see that you've worked with porcelain and stoneware and terracotta. And so you've worked with a variety of different kinds of clays. So love to chat about that. And of course, your fabulous designs and colors. It's all really so great.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. And I felt that, you know, that your work represents years of hard work. And I know that you've been at clay and pottery for a long time. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey and to you becoming the artist that you are here today?
I started pretty much full time when I was 15. So when I was really young, I lived in Los Angeles and we had ceramics in the school I was in, so it was really fun. I was a little bit overactive, I would say, you know, a little bit, you know, I was a big time athlete and super, super, you know, good strength, good eye hand coordination, but a little bit too much energy as a teenager and a young teenager. So making pots was pretty fun. And we moved to Connecticut in 1974 and there was a ceramics class there. So I did that. And one day I made something and I remember it vividly as to what I made. And I remember in my head, I thought, God, this is really cool. I'm going to learn how to do this. And so that was probably when I was about 15 or 16. And it was, probably everybody out there knows about the Clay Arts Center in Portchester, New York, which is a very, very long time, quite famous community studio with classes and resident artists and members and that kind of thing. So I happened to know that that was in Portchester, right down the street from us. I went in there and I became an apprentice to a potter. And so I learned how to make clay. I learned how to make glazes. I learned how to glaze stuff all, you know, in production setting. And these guys were a little older than me and quite skilled. And so did that for a little bit. And then I went off to college and didn't like that much. And that was up in New Hampshire. And I found another potter to apprentice to up there. And so that was a little bit more in depth as far as studio work, again, making clay, making glazes, glazing pots, helping do everything in the studio. And up there, you spend a lot of time, especially in the winter, cutting wood, moving wood, so on and so forth. So after 2 years of that and being a California boy, having my feet be totally frozen for 2 winters pretty much put a fork in that deal. And I wanted to go and get a degree in ceramics somewhere. So I don't know if anybody knows about the big giant Barron's College books that they used to have. It's like a telephone book with every single college in the world. Anyway, I opened that up and there it was. Arizona State University has a BFA in ceramics. I applied, I got in, and I moved out here in 1978 and started working in the studio at ASU and graduated in 81. And that's when I started my own studio. Over the years, I had a production company where I had as many as 10 employees. We used to do shows all over the country. We did had significant revenue, but also significant expenses, and that's kind of why I have no hair. And basically, that went on for quite some time. And after it got to the point where the only person that was getting paid was the employees, the landlord, the tax man, the accountant, and every once in a while, a lawyer. I decided I was going to jettison that whole crew, and I built a studio behind my house in Scottsdale in 1989. And so this building started off as just a shell, and now it's, probably one of the premier private studios in the state, if not, in everywhere. So it's super comfortable, super efficient, and it's sort of become a destination for collectors and students and art people. We have museum tours. We have all sorts of stuff goes on here. My wife's a sculptor, and so she has her studio here. So we do not in this building, but on the rest somewhere else on the property. So it's an active place, especially this time of year where it's our season. So Scottsdale in the springtime is a pretty busy place. So we'll have lots of people coming through here over the next. I've just basically been working on my own since 1989 in this studio. No employees, no helpers. It gets kind of lonely. So if I chatter, it's because I never talk to anybody. And so it's get up every day, walk to the studio, and do my thing. And when I'm done, and I start looking around, going, "Oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that." I walk over to the light switch, shut it down, and go in the house because it's going to be here tomorrow. So,
Isn't that a beautiful thing?
yeah, I like to say I'm always in the studio except for when I'm not. So if I'm in the zip code, I'm working 7 days a week. And I'd like to also say that at this point, I'm trying to be semi-retired, which is only 5 to 7 hours a day, 7 days a week, instead of 10 to 14 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that sometimes works out, most of the time, not so much.
So you've touched on doing sort of an apprenticeship model when you started off and then went to school and then really were on your own running a business. And so you've been a an artist businessman for many years.
Yes,
Yeah.
yes. And I think that's really. My dad was a businessman, so he helped me, when he was alive and way back in the past, he helped me, understand what it was to run a business, to have employees, to have overhead and what you needed to do in order to meet your expenses and actually produce the work. And there's so much stuff that goes in involved with that aspect of it, that it's really more of a lifetime of just experience and doing it. And if you can get a little advice on it, it's nice. But yeah, it's I try to be professional, and I try not to do any drama. And if you do say you're going to do something, you do it, and you deliver, period.
Yeah, like I hear you've gone from having a big production where you've got lots of employees and lots of things to attend to really zoning in on what's been important to you, which has been making the art itself.
Yeah, back when I had the production company, I did my own personal work a lot then, and it was sort of helpful because in those days I did all the national shows, all the American Craft Council shows, and then all the gift markets for the production company work, which I could manage all the freight and do all the, and I had help to manage those shows a little bit more. But that kind of business has gone away. But it was good to be able to do both my personal work and the production company, because you go out on the road and you do shows kind of concurrently or back to back, and it made it a little bit more affordable day.
And challenging too, I can imagine.
Oh yeah, I mean, I look back at that and go, what the hell, man? It was just nuts. But then again, you know, being if I was young and strong, which I was, it made it not so bad. It was fun. You get to see people and get to see a lot of new work and lots of people that I really I'm still friends with from all those years ago. And now with social media, you can connect back with people that you spent a ton of time with on the road. So that's kind of fun now.
Yeah, that's very cool. Now, you know, you've been working with clay for years, had all these experiences that we've talked about, and I'm really interested in what inspires artists. And so in the context of your art, what continues to motivate you? What do you get excited about? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
I want to finish what I started. So if I make pots today, I need to trim them tomorrow, and then they're going to get bisque fired, or they're going to get texture, or they're going to do whatever needs to get done to them. And kind of the goal, I think, is just to finish and to execute stuff hopefully, to make things how I want them to look. And as you move through a period of time or a career, things just evolve and morph, and your techniques change, and you see something and you do a little different, and so you just keep changing. So there's days when I'm not so excited, and there's other days where I can't wait to get out here. But it all just depends on what I'm working on at the time. And there's a lot of things, there's a lot of things to do, and sometimes there's just too many things to do, and there's little things that just make you crazy that you know you have to attend to, so it breaks up your focus and your time. But pretty much I'm pretty good at getting up and getting out here and doing my thing every day.
Yeah, there was a period of time when I was running, and I remember having motivational difficulties getting out on the road some days. And I read a runner's magazine about this guy who was a famous runner, and he put his running shoes right by his bed so that when his legs swung out in the morning, they'd go into his runners and he'd be able to get out the door. He didn't have any opportunity to find something else to do. And it sounds like you do something similar, but in the art world, you come out of your house and you're in the studio. It doesn't matter what's going on.
Yeah, it's you can either sit around and drink coffee, which is kind of boring, and or you can get out and take care of business. So there's when I have work to ship, that's sort of a non-creative but a good busy work thing to do. And there's just and when you make work, I believe that nothing is, especially in this day and age, nothing even exists until it has a professional photograph of it, and it's sitting, on your website or in your archive so you can present it, and it's at your fingertips. Same thing with your resume and your, excuse me, artist statement. All that stuff needs to be done. So, especially the photographs, because over the years I've always run into people. They say, "Oh, what do you do?" "Oh, I'm a this, I'm a that. I make this, I make that." I say, "Well, do you have any pictures?" And they say, "No." Well, then that work doesn't exist. So, finishing, and then documenting is really extraordinarily important, because you can make pots all day and you can tell me how wonderful they are. Or, make videos of you doing works in progress, which doesn't really do anything because it's not finished. I mean, the piece can crack, it can break, it can blow up. Who knows what can happen? But to finish and document it and then have it available to either send to a client, put it on your website, put it on Instagram, send it to other clients, whatever it is, that's really, I guess, the goal every day is to finish and to present it.
What a great message to send to other artists, because I think that's really important as well, is to have that sense of finishing, and that ends the piece, and then you can move on to something else.
Yeah, and I've always say, good, bad, or indifferent, whether that piece that you just finished, it's the product of all the work you've done. And then and again, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, it's done. And you take a picture of it, even if it's horrible, but it's part of your record. And you may not show it to anybody. It may go in the garbage, but you know what you did, and there's a record of it. And so taking a good professional picture of everything. And then I have a huge book that I have. I print out, if I shoot 20 pieces, 6 pieces, 40 pieces, I print those pieces out, I bring them out, bring those papers out in the studio and measure them. And if they're going to go on the website, I put that price down on there, make sure that I know how much it is and that it's been published. And but it's done, and then you can move on to the next step.
Great idea. When I was doing a little bit of research about you, I read a quote from you in the Phoenix magazine, which said, you said, "It's all about the structure. You can add all this color and texture, but if you make crummy pots, you're just putting a tutu on a poodle. It's not a dancer, it's still a dog."
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. I love that
But
quote.
no, so basically that's where all this stuff starts. It's all about making beautiful shapes, and I love abstract form, and I like real crusty, funky, but there's certain things for me that work visually and aesthetically, and then there's stuff that doesn't. But my family had always had ceramics and museum catalogs in their home. So, I was exposed to as a really young age to like this catalog from the LA County Museum. They had a Japanese wood, I guess it was a teapot show or a raku show or something. And these pots are wood-fired pots, and they were the crustiest, gnarliest things you've ever seen, and I loved them. And if I could make stuff like that today, I'd do it in a heartbeat. But that's not what I do or where I'm at or have the facility for. But I mean, that kind of stuff, just I like it a lot, but that's not what I do. But when it's right, it's you can tell it's right. Same thing with everybody else's work.
Yeah, form is really the basis of everything that we do, isn't it?
Yeah, good pots are good pots, beautiful lines, beautiful, just beautiful, clean form. And then you can fix it up. You can put texture on it. You can, make it funky. But if there's a great, it's like building a it's like a house with good bones, I guess they call it. So if you have good bones, you can do a lot of stuff with good bones.
Absolutely. How do you put a lot of color and texture on your work? How do you balance the use of color with these other elements of design, like form and texture, in your pieces?
The pots, for the most part, sort of dictate the texture that I'm going to do, and there's days when I can't actually do some of the textures. My hand won't move properly. I mean, it's not there's no physical defect. It's just, for some reason, I can't get it to do what I want. So I do something else, and try to make that work on the shape. And so certain textures work nicely on certain pots. Certain colors work nicely on certain pots and certain textures. And then the way you put all that color down, and if we're talking about the earthenware is just layers upon layers of sprayed color. And if you go on the website, you can see some vintage stuff, and that's layers and layers of brush color. And so it's sort of it's all kind of based on the pattern and what's worked in the past, because this is everything's here is one of a kind, but it's not, because it's all a series of, a 10-year series. So as I get better with application of color, and tweaking other aspects of the of making things, they change. And so it you just got to look at it and figure out what you're going to do with it. Some pieces look great, plain, just straight vivid blue, done, great, easy. And then the rest of it has other another future, let's say. And sometimes I fire glaze and fire things as many as five or six times to build up texture, especially recently, building up lots of texture and color on and depth of color on these and texture on these earthenware pots. The porcelain's something different. That's just graphic pattern and on real clean form, but that's the decoration and the glazing on that is super, super tight and needs to really it's technically challenging, let's put it that way, whereas the other part's a little easier.
I guess, I think that when you're standing and looking at a piece that you're finishing and applying either texture or color, I'm sure it's an intuitive process that you have to decide whether you want to add more color, different color, more texture. Could you describe for people how you think about that?
Yeah, on the earthenware, and that's I think what we're talking about mostly is the earthenware, the texture is already set. So those pots get made today, and then the texture goes on tomorrow, and then they dry, and then all the color work is done green. So I start I those pieces are sitting out there waiting for me, like a bunch of soldiers in a line, and I just go out there with my spray guns and say, okay, what are we what's going to go, what are you going to do, and just start, just mix it up and take some color out there and start moving stuff around. And there's times when I know I need to make pretty pots, or there's other times when I don't have any agenda and I just do some experiments, change up the layering, thicker, thinner, any number of different variations. But it is real intuitive. I try not to think too much about it, except for the actual technical aspect of putting color down and the thickness that comes out of a spray gun, and what has worked in the past. So there's certain combinations that you don't use because they're ugly, but there's plenty of things that haven't been done, and plenty of techniques that if you see something that you did almost by accident and it looks cool on, even if it's a 4-inch square piece of a pot, the rest of it's ugly, go ahead and start squirting glaze at that. And so that's why making pots on a potter's wheel is so effective, because you can have a lot of bodies, and so the bodies are there to decorate. And lots of people just throw pots. Well, there's no point in throwing pots. Again, if going back to the very first thing we said, if you don't finish them. So I have lots of people to work on all the time. And that's also a way to keep yourself producing and functioning daily if you have work to finish.
Absolutely. That's some of the excitement I hear in your voice about the work itself, right? It's applying the color to the piece and seeing what comes out of the kiln.
Yeah, it's and at this point, I'm doing a lot of experimental stuff where I have no clue, none whatsoever, as to what's going to happen. And if you went onto my Instagram page today, you'd see, or last week, you'd see three or four new pieces that it are literally completely and totally unplanned. I have no idea what they're going to do, and it's working. But the only reason why it's working is because I know when to quit, and I know when to keep going at this point. I can kind of feel it. And so I don't, I think all this, all the intuitive part and all the rest of it is just comes from year, all this experience, hundreds, maybe thousands of pieces hundreds and hundreds of hours of putting color down in a number of different ways and handling the materials to get where you want to go.
Lots of practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you've talked about laying down color and glaze. Can you tell us a little bit about your technique? Are you using slips or glazes or underglazes or?
Since I think we're talking about the earthenware again, it's a formula that I literally took out of Ceramics Monthly. That was a Eva Kwong and Kirk Magnus long wide-ranging slip. I think it's in a 1989 issue, and it's super simple. It's four or five ingredients, and the reason I used it then is, number one, simple to make and it's cheap. Because if you use all these fancy materials in these colors, it can get, extraordinarily expensive. And especially when when you have no clue as to what you're doing, you need to have something that's pretty easy and affordable to make. But that original formula has morphed into a variety of different things. And then I use a lot of Mason color straight out of the bag from the supplier. And in a percentage in a base slip, which is that Magnus Kwong base, and I've adjusted it over the years because it's more related to a high fire white slip versus what I'm using on the low fire Cone 04. So it's been fritted, it's been this, it's been that, and you just keep monkeying with it until it's you get and there's certain you keep adjusting it until you get it. They all do the same thing at the same temperature, even though some of the additions are different. So some of them have a little bit more additional frit than others. Some use less colorant and more oxide because there's certain things that are fluxes, like copper carb, or excuse me, copper oxide is a flux. So you don't need to put as much frit into a base if you're gonna make a black slip. But that's also this is also something that got developed over about 10 years, or and it's still getting picked apart. But mostly, I don't really change it anymore, and I just work with what I have and I know what works. And then you can have a lot of freedom to. Just let it rip with either a brush or spray guns or dunking or dipping or however you're going to do it to get color on there.
Sounds like that you've moved from using a brush a lot to spray.
This, and it's funny because people kind of look at you sideways and you say, "Oh, I spray all these colors." Well, it's actually harder than brushing stuff. So, and especially when you have when you're doing all your work on greenware. It's the control of the equipment and the having and then having the proper equipment is super important. And just putting the stuff down in the proper thickness. And the slip this slip is sort of a watercolor in a sense, because anything that you put on underneath something else affects the color. So it's if you put yellow on top of blue, you get green, and vice and on and on and on, all your all the stuff you learn in school about color. So with these colors, whether you they're brushed or sprayed, that's what you get. And so it kind of, it makes it really interesting as to what does happen when things get fired.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. So, do you single fire, or is it you fire and then add a clear glaze, or?
earthenware pots, and since they're not vitreous, they're not glazed on the inside. Most they're all closed forms anyway. And pretty much I make these round pieces or pieces with necks on them for the most part, with these very closed forms. So they are not functional items. They are objects. They have no illusion to function. You know, if you can get a human hair down the holes in the top of them of these bottles, and well, more power to you. But I want these pots to be objects, whether they're 6 inches tall, 6 inches wide, or 24 inches tall and 24 inches wide. They are objects. They have nothing to do with function, and they're just form and space with
Yeah,
color.
I like that. That frees us up in that context, isn't it? Hey, when people are looking at your work, because I think that art doesn't end with the finishing of the piece in our studio, the art continues on into the eyes and the heart of the person looking at your work, or touching our work. How do you think the choice of color influences the overall mood or message of your work?
I think some of them are kind of dark and broody, and some of them are, bright and cheery. And it's really it just depends on how you put it down and what choices you make. I don't really think about it. I mean, I'm doing stuff right some things right now that are really, really dark and broody. It has nothing to do with my mind frame or how I feel about pots. It's just I like the black with crusty black with some white running through it. Or I mean it's I don't really I don't really think about it. And I've always thought too that if I make good pots, if I make beautiful work, people will respond to it. And so again, you make great pots, you do beautiful decoration, you present it well. And I don't have a big rap to go with it. It's I make the work because I want to. No one tells me what to do, when to do it, how to do it. And so if I'm happy with it, mostly everybody else is pretty pretty on board. And sometimes people don't, they have no clue as to what this work is. So that's fine. And you try to educate them a little bit. I mean, I used to do shows with my work from the 2000s, and it was very organic with lots of curly handles and stuff. And people thought they looked like they were gourds. They were vegetables. They were papier mâché. And I make these teapots out of earthenware, and they have these real interesting textures and colors on them. And people would, and I put it right in front of their face in a booth at eye level. And it says Nick Bernard Ceramics. And people would still ask me, is this teapot paper? Is it wood? Is it metal? And it's like, basically if you look at the work, there's really pretty much only three things that it could be. And really, there's really only one proper guess. Otherwise, you've been living in a hole for your entire life. But you try to be patient and tell people what it is you're doing. And if they don't understand it, that's fine. But I just do it for myself. I have no agenda with anybody else.
And of course, it is true that people respond to this work in different ways, like you were just describing. Somebody might like one of your pieces and they might not like another one. And sometimes it's very hard for them to even figure out why they like one piece versus another.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with who, of course, who's looking at it, what their level of education is, where they've been, what they've done, their age, people who've been around a while, people who've traveled, people who have had a significant amount of education and are interested in culture and history, and they get it. because they've done their own work and they've been places and they've seen stuff. So it's people that don't have any experience have no clue, and that's fine. They need to either get an education or work it or work at it if they're interested in learning about it, because nothing like that comes cheap. It's a lot of even learning about ceramics or art in general is a lot of work.
It's a lot of hard work, I agree. What kind of challenges have you had in working with color and surface design?
Sometimes stuff is just ugly. You got to, but you got to do it. You got to do everything. Every single thing that you make has a reason to be made. Because, and if you do it, then you finish it. And if it looks stupid when it's done, well, try not to do that again. Try not to use. Try. Sec. I have a. I have. I grew up in Los Angeles, and a bunch of my buddies are doctors at this point. Or they're and now they're all retired doctors. But one of my favorite things was down in Mexico with my friends on the surf trip, and I popped my shoulder paddling into a wave, and I could hear it, and I kind of struggled into the beach, and my friend who's a surgeon came in. And I said, "Eric, you got any pain meds?" And he said, "Well, before I give you any pain medication, I need to do you need to do a test." And so he said, "Well, hold up your arm." He said, "Does that hurt?" He said, "Does it hurt when you put it to the side?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Don't do that again. Take this." So basically, try to limit your mistakes, and if you're not paying attention, you'll make more mistakes than you need to. And so attention to detail is super important with this work. Even if it looks a little funky, it's meant to look funky. It's the surfaces and the shapes can be extraordinarily touchy as far as being a little bit better. So if you take a half inch off the base of a piece, make it stand up a little bit more, it's a lot more elegant. But if you're not paying attention to that, then you're going to make a bunch of short dumpy pots. Same thing with the shapes at the top of the piece. How is that form finished off? Are the curves right? Is it flat? Does it have square shoulder? Does it have a flat space or ripply spaces when you're trying to make a big fat round pot? Well, you got to pay attention, and that bit me one time, years back, where I was making all these little pieces, and I looked at them when they were done. It's like, that's not round. It's horrible. What are you going to do about that? So basically, you're going to pay more attention, and never forgot that lesson.
It is so true. You have to pay attention. I know I do sculpture work, and one day I had a piece sitting up on a stand, and I happened to sit down in a chair in my studio, and I looked up at the piece. So now I'm looking up at it and saw pieces underneath or a part of it underneath of it that I went, oh, wow, is that ever ugly? But had I not spent the time looking up almost from the floor, I never would have seen that. And so I hear you big time about being attending to the details and taking your time with pieces.
Yeah, and the other thing is, just because you made it and you finished it doesn't mean that it's any good. I got so much stuff that I've made over the years that there's nothing wrong with it. It's just not very good. So what do you do with that? I have studio sale. I sell everything I make, or try to, but there's work sitting out in my studio sale on my patio. And it's real nicely displayed, and it's well lit, but it's outside, it's not inside. And it's an important part of my business. And the work is all viable. It's just not as good as it needs to be for me to sell it at retail. And there's a lot of experimental stuff out there, and things that didn't quite work. Very few seconds, but mostly stuff that's just doesn't go with the program. And it was not meant to be part of the program. It was an experiment, or it was a test, and but people love it, and it's a real important part of my income.
But it didn't meet your standard.
Yeah, so nothing leaves this building at especially to the galleries, that's not absolutely impeccable. And every single thing that goes out the door has a photograph that goes with it, in the size and resolution that they've requested, professional invoice, blah blah blah, all that stuff, because there's plenty more way more talented people than me out there, but the people I work with, they like it because I provide them with an easy way to show and sell the work.
It's really important to, on the business side, to have that professionalism, which is what I would describe what you're doing in terms of the delivery being reliable, having all the processes in place, like how do you do invoices in a manner that really works with your customers.
Yeah, I mean, I have some of my customers, the galleries, and I mean they just thank me for providing them drama free and easy for them experience, packaging, because I'm shipping pots all over the planet. I'm taking round fragile objects and putting them in a package in a square box and sending them via FedEx. So it's all new packaging. Everything's brand new, and it's clean, and it's sound, and it works, I don't lose any work. So you send out $1,000 worth of work to a place, and you lose one piece. That pretty much, makes the whole deal pathetic and worthless. So not losing any work in freight, not losing work to private customers, is even more important, because you're out that work and boy, you got to pay them back and you lost the piece to boot. So making your shipping and preparation for that is super important.
Yeah, it doesn't just end when you pull something out of the kiln.
No, that's that it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist until you take a picture of it and do all that,
I
and it
hear
still
you.
doesn't exist until someone sees it, and then
That's
it
right.
either stays here and gets sold in the studio, or goes to a gallery, or someone buys it off the website, or however it works. But
Absolutely. Hey, I appreciate our time. We're kind of coming to the end here, but I wondered if you had any advice. I mean, you've given our listeners lots of ideas here today, but I wonder if you have any specific advice for a young ceramic artist who's just starting to develop their own style.
work as much as you possibly can. Show up, get it done. You just got to do all the work, all of it, every single aspect of it. From A, B, C, D, E, all the way through. You can't start at A and skip to D. You got to do everything, and then you're probably going to have to back up. So you got to do all the work, all of it, all of it. There's no, and have and I know they're teaching in college these days, because I have some people that I do a little tiny bit of mentoring with, who are graduate students or were graduate students, and basically they're teaching people how to have a wrap, and how to have a whole bunch of verbiage and explanation of their work. All right, well, great, but I want to see the work. I don't want to hear all this nonsense about all of your influences and your this and your that and your show me good work, and show me a body of work, and show me a professional presentation. That's because all the rest of it is just nonsense. It's just complete and total nonsense. Because you got to have the work.
I hear you. And that's what people appreciate. They are buying the work, not the explanation of the work.
Yeah, and there's so much chatter and so little work. And you look at stuff and there's times when if you there's a perfect example. We went to an artist talk in one of the local museums, and this person was really trying to pull the wool over my eyes, and someone called her on it. And yeah, it was sort of embarrassing for them because the work was not great, and there was a bunch of jive to go with it verbally, and I didn't buy it. No one else did. So lose the jive and make the work.
Yeah, great advice. Hey, absolutely. Hey, Nick, thanks so much for spending some time with us today here. I think you've given people some great ideas about how to produce some good work, how to work in series and finish the work and understand deeply that it's not just, as we said, pulling it out of the kiln. It involves a whole process from putting your hands on the clay to shipping it and having the client receive it. So thanks
Yeah,
so much.
it's a lifetime's worth.
Yeah,
You're never done.
absolutely. Hey, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Color and Ceramics Podcast with Bob Acton and his guests. Please help others find the podcast by subscribing to this podcast wherever you find your podcasts, such as iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, or other podcatchers. And don't forget to give us a review. We'll see you next time.